The problem we're solving for, specifically for those that we deem pre-arrears, which means these are people that aren't technically in financial difficulty yet, but they might be. They might eventually, like, they might be on the journey to becoming a financially vulnerable customer. So the way we look at debt management, like, traditionally debt management has been, you've racked up a bunch of, you've borrowed money across a number of cars, you have loans, et cetera, et cetera. You now can't afford to pay those loans. So you're going to go and use some debt management product provided by the government, like a IVA or a consolidation loan with a specialist lender. But actually that ends up having a bunch of impact to you down the line, right? So like for 6 years, you have this marker on your credit file that says like you've got an IVA. Then it becomes difficult to live your life. You can't go and apply for anything else. You can't get a mortgage. It's difficult to then access cheaper sources of finance. Firstly, being debt isn't a bad thing. Being in debt isn't a bad thing. You're going to borrow money throughout your life, whether it's for your first car, for your education, for your home, whatever it may be, you're going to borrow money throughout your life. Generally, that, like, it's tied to some of the largest life moments that we have. When we study, when we get married, when we have our children, whatever it may be, like, usually there's a financial transaction and usually it's borrowing. So we look at it from another lens, like, actually everyone's got debt. So how do you build a product for everyone that actually hasn't missed a payment, but maybe they want better control over it? They want to feel like they understand what's happening. One of the things that we did when we started is we tried to understand where is the gap in information that people don't have that often leads to them getting in worse situations.
Hello and welcome back to Purpose Driven FinTech. I am your host, Moni Millares. For the first time ever in history, consumer borrowing in the UK has racked up to £2 trillion. We've never seen this before. The pandemic ripple effects, high interest rates, and the rising cost of living have led people to rely on credit. Even the richest 20% of the population are using credit to get by. This problem is a problem statement that must be talked about. Today, we speak with Yasin Rostam, founder and CEO at Incredible. I absolutely love their product. It's solving a genuine customer pain point and it's well thought through. He's not building just a debt management solution. He is providing a solution for peace of mind. For us to have 10 times impact as an industry, he advocates we collectively must put customer outcomes at the center of what we do. Keyword, collectively. Incredible is a debt management solution that allows customers to make credit repayments on autopilot while ensuring customers pay off their most expensive debt first. We expand on user experience, financial resilience, how to measure impact, including how can we increase the overpayments people make towards their loans? How can we nudge them to do roundups to pay off debt versus roundups to savings? Findings from user testing, and much, much more. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in YouTube, follow a 5-star rating in Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and remember to connect in LinkedIn to keep the conversation going. So, Jas, it's an absolute pleasure having you in the show. Thank you.
Hi, Monica. It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Likewise, the pleasure is mine. Okay, so you and I have been emailing for a long time trying to record this conversation. So really looking forward to finally having the conversation.
Likewise. I like that.
But before we go into it, like, this podcast is all about how can we build fintechs that have more impact. Yours is one of them that is, I love what you're doing. So I want to start with, in your opinion, how can we build more purpose-driven fintechs?
I personally think there is no single provider that can accomplish that. I think we do need to work as an ecosystem to be able to facilitate that. When you look at people's financial journeys that they go through their life, they experience different products throughout their entire life. And staying with one provider might not always make the most sense. I think you genuinely have to be open to working with other partners or providers or banks or whatever it may be, depending on which, like, journey is best for that customer. So really, I think it comes to opening up the ecosystem. That's generally how we can achieve a more purpose-driven fintech industry.
Can you expand? What does that mean?
For example, like how many people are with their bank but are unhappy with a given product? Like, why are we not sending them to places that they can maximize their money? Why have we built an industry in which we're just trying to keep everything within a single platform, right? That sort of almost goes again. We had this whole like wave of open banking and open APIs, and everyone was like, no, we want to build everything internally. We want to create the super app. And so yeah, I understand that from a business perspective and a revenue perspective, but are you able to deliver the best financial outcome for the customer? No, probably not.
I love that, because then exactly, it's you're right. Like we're like open banking, open everything.
Yeah.
But I want the customer for me, and I want the customer to be top of wallet.
It's beneficial and think for me. Let me keep it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a really good point. What you're saying is, let's do what's best for the customer, that we do that internally within a fintech, but that's the word internally.
Yeah.
So now let's do what's best for the customer as an industry.
Exactly. And I think you can always tell the difference between those that say they do want to deliver the best outcome for the customer, but who's actually going to prove it.
Doing.
Yeah.
Cool. So coming back to you then, incredible. Tell us about your purpose.
To make people achieve what we call financial peace of mind through a very specific journey that they go through in their life, which generally tends to be, for most people, the largest transaction they make through their life, which is an act of borrowing. So whether you're borrowing on a credit card, whether you're taking out a personal loan, your student loan, your mortgage, your car loan, whatever it may be, that generally, for the most part, is probably some of the largest transactions that you experience. Most people don't have a large amount of savings. They don't invest a lot of money. But what they do have is various forms of debt. And actually, when you look at the solutions out there, they're very limited in capacity and in innovation, and they're usually lacking to provide customers with what they need. And when you look at savings, investments, neobanking, challenger banking, whatever it may be, we've created these amazing solutions over the last 10 years, specifically in fintech. When it comes to managing what you borrow, like post-borrowing, there's very little innovation there, or very few digital tools available to you to manage that and feeling control. So ultimately, we exist for that purpose.
Good. And I liked that you said at the beginning, peace of mind. I have so many friends that now I just prioritize peace of mind over whatever it might be. It is so important. And when we talk about financial well-being, there's an element of my metrics, my numbers, and the other one of my mental and emotional state when it comes to my money.
Exactly.
Peace of mind. Woof. And that applies for everything. Lending, but also, let's say, pensions.
Exactly.
Or investments. I like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, good on you.
Thank you.
I'm like, yes, that's a good one. It's a good proposition. No, but it's true. That's the guiding North Star.
Yeah. People can generally be in control of their finances, or they feel like they're saving, or their income is enough, or they've invested the right amount. But generally, that also comes with a lot of anxiety. They don't always feel like peace, right? There's still a worry if anything was to happen and all of a sudden it's not going in the way they had hoped to. They don't feel in control, and they certainly don't have financial peace of mind.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a beautiful purpose. I think many people resonate with that.
Thank you.
So what was then, when you got started, what was your hypothesis behind Incredible? Why were you like, hey, we're starting this company and we're here to win because?
Yeah, there's a few different touch points to that. So one of them was understanding, I think, what didn't make sense. So my personal background has been in open banking almost a decade. And one of the things I was focused on is like building tools for SMEs to manage their balance sheet. And interestingly, when you look at a consumer, they have a balance sheet, like they've got assets and liabilities. But when you look at the general population, and even like some of my friends, people, our peers, people we work with, they generally don't have the best financial education. And that's because it's not taught to us. Like, we just figure out along the way. And a good example of this is when you see people who are saving money or investing in alternative assets, in this case, like whether it's crypto or whatever it may be, they're saving in low yielding products, and yet they've got high interest debt on file, right? So an Amex with 75% APR, yet they're just like prioritizing this saving money and, you know, investing, because we've spent, again, as an industry, we've spent billions educating the customer, saying, hey, you need to save and invest. And if you're not, you're doing something wrong. But actually, there's this other product that you have that's losing you money every month, which is interest and the compound interest that you face when you borrow money. So that was one of the things that never made sense to me. And then I guess I started looking into who else is trying to solve this. And generally, anything within consumer finance is, it's the PFMs that have tried to solve this. But I've always found they're quite insight driven. And with insights alone, mm-hmm. I don't think you can change the behavior of a customer. You really do need to automate the action, which is what we're focused on. And the initial thought process was when I went through, I think I was 19 at the time, I had my first credit card. I learned about a balance transfer, having only just learned about how compound interest racks up against you. And when I learned about the balance transfer and I switched it over, I realized like it felt like a cheat code. Like I'm no longer paying interest. And when I started to think, why isn't everyone else automatically like switching their balances or putting them in a balance transfer product, whatever it may be? It just, there was no tech back then to do that. And now we're in the position to be able to do that. So it's a mix of like, how do you actually help people with like, how do you teach better financial education, but equally, how do you create better financial outcomes? And mixing all of that plus my talk about professional expertise, I came to the idea of Incredible.
It's a good idea. Cool. So I'll build on that, because you just touched on, of course, like you're talking about debt a lot, right? So if we think about a market like the UK,
yeah,
we're saying roughly 25% of British consumers, they are using credit cards to cover the cost of living. So that is telling us a lot about the state of our balance sheet as consumers.
Yeah.
So the big question that I have for all of us as an industry is, in the past 10 years, we as fintechers, we've had impact. We have. We've had impact on consumers. We've changed user experience. The banks have changed as well. Now we're more transparent. However, I think we have not had enough impact in customers' lives as such. It's been incremental rather than genuine impact. Yeah. So what is it that we need to do today as an industry to have 10 times the impact in 5 years' time?
That's a great question. I think what we, going back to something I said earlier, is we do need to prioritize outcomes for the individual who's on the other end. And in some cases, it might go against what you're trying to achieve as a business. But ultimately, as any fintech, by creating a healthier customer, you're generally increasing your own outcome. You're improving your own outcomes as well. A good example is like lending. If the people that you're lending to do not have good financial education and they have anxiety around money and they don't understand it works, generally, if that customer then becomes a financially vulnerable customer, and they are no longer to afford their repayments, that's a negative for both parties, right? Like the person borrowing money eventually is going to go through the collection process. Maybe the lender writes off the loan and then sells it to a debt collection agency. That's not created a positive outcome for anyone. So if you're going back to individual outcomes, wherever you are on the journey, how do we as a fintech, how do we as an industry prevent those things from happening? That have just been like, that's just the way things have existed in the past. Is there now a new future? And we're already seeing new collection solutions. We're seeing new lending solutions. BNPL started with the hope that people don't need to pay interest for things they borrow, but that's gone into a different direction now.
Yes.
They're using it for their Deliveroo and stuff like that. So again, there's going to be nuance to all of these outcomes we build. I think, again, we just need to build together to figure out how to achieve that.
Yeah. And then just to build on that, let's say we go back to customer outcomes. And at the very beginning of the episode, you said, hey, we need to work together and put the customer at the center of what we do as an industry, not as a fintech.
Yeah.
Then also as an industry, as how would we measure that we've had success in delivering these customer outcomes?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And something that we've joined recently is something called the Fintech Pledge 2025. And what it looks at is these different pillars of finance, basically. So there's credit, there's debt, there's savings, there's bills, there's benefits. And what they're doing is working with a number of different fintechs to look at, like, depending on which pillar that you've optimized for, whether it's your savings platform or your bill management platform, it's how would you define what a good outcome is? And then how would you then measure it? So for our case, it's how many times can we, there's a number of different ways, but one example is, like, how can we increase the overpayments people make towards their loans? And we do that through roundup. So we track how many people that we can nudge to then round up. And rather than rounding up and putting it into a savings pot, where it's in often case a lot lower than the interest rate that they're incurring on their credit cards, we'll look at how many times do we do that. And if we can then measure against that, we know that we're creating better financial outcomes, because that is directly linked to the interest that they will eventually incur or save, rather.
Good.
Looking at the pillar that you're optimizing for, in some case it might be all, but oftentimes it's one of those, either credit, debt, bills, benefits, or savings, and then optimizing for people to do more of those things.
So then if we talk about debt management as such.
Yeah.
And your existence as incredible.
Yeah.
Can we go deeper?
Yeah.
What is the problem that you're solving for?
Yeah. The problem we're solving for, specifically for those that we deem pre-arrears, which means these are people that aren't technically in financial difficulty yet, but they might be. They might eventually, like, they might be on the journey to becoming a financially vulnerable customer. So the way we look at debt management, like, traditionally debt management has been, you've racked up a bunch of, you've borrowed money across a number of cars, you have loans, et cetera, you now can't afford to pay those loans. So you're going to go and use some debt management product provided by the government, like a IVA or a consolidation loan with a specialist lender. But actually that ends up having a bunch of impact to you down the line, right? So, like, for 6 years, you have this marker on your credit file that says, like, you've got an IVA. Then it becomes difficult to live your life. You can't go and apply for anything else. You can't get a mortgage. It's difficult to then access cheaper sources of finance. So to us, debt management means, well, like, you're going to be, like, being one, firstly, being debt isn't a bad thing. Being in debt isn't a bad thing. You're going to borrow money throughout your life, whether it's for your first car, for your education, for your home, whatever it may be, you're going to borrow money throughout your life. Generally, that, like, it's tied to some of the largest life moments that we have. When we study, when we get married, when we have our children, whatever it may be, like, usually there's a financial transaction and usually it's borrowing. So we look at it from another lens, like, actually, everyone's got debt. So how do you build a product for everyone that actually hasn't missed a payment, but maybe they just want a better, they want better control over it. They want to feel like they understand what's happening. One of the things that we did when we started is we tried to understand, like, where is the gap in information that people don't have that often leads to them getting in worse situations. So one of those things is not understanding how their interest rate works. One of them is understanding, like, if I miss a payment, what actually happens? Like, how does that get reported? What is the impact of that? And again, like, no one grows up wanting to learn about, like, how is my credit score calculated and what happened if I miss this payment, or what does compound interest mean? Again, going back to compound interest, we know exactly what it means when we're saving and investing, right? When you look at compound interest, when you're saving and investing, it makes a lot of sense. It's often ignored when you're borrowing money. But if you have it in front of you and you're understanding the cost of borrowing money, you understand how much it's going to cost you, how long it will take you, we would probably make different actions. We'd probably treat it differently because we have the information in front of us. So for us, debt management really is about almost basically just managing what you borrow.
Yeah. And then basically, if I summarize that, the how to manage what you borrow is by having good understanding of what borrowing is and then how your actions impact basically the lending journey as such.
Exactly.
So then can you tell us a little bit about, like, how big is this problem? Maybe in the UK, are there any numbers you can share with us to be like, ooh, actually, it's pretty big?
Yeah. So if you look at one interesting stat we have is, for the first time ever in history, consumer borrowing has racked up to £2 trillion. And that's the UK alone. Like, that, we've never seen that before, ever. And now, I think, again, in the backdrop of a pandemic, economic turmoil, high interest rates, Like people generally, and the cost of living, of course, people generally are relying more on credit now than they ever have before. Even the richest 20% of the population are using short-term credit to get by, whether they're using it for groceries or using it for the takeaway or whatever it may be. We're seeing a lot of people borrow money more than they ever have before.
That is a little bit concerning because it's a very high number as such. So then how do we solve this? That's another way of me asking. Can you tell me what's your solution?
Do you mean in regard to Incredible?
Yeah.
So we're solving it by effectively, what we want to do is do two, like within what we said earlier about achieving financial peace of mind is, what does that actually mean? Like for us, that means reducing the interest fees that people incur. So generally, if you look at people that borrow money on credit cards and they're repaying the minimum, it will take them anywhere from like 25 to 30 years to pay off that balance, even if the balance is only £2,000. Just again, like there is an education gap here for those that don't understand how they should be repaying, what is affordable for them to repay each month. There is so much, there's quite high cognitive load there, and like doing the calculations and automating the repayments, all these different actions they need to take to basically be on a much better path. We want to just automate all of that away for someone. They'll onboard, they'll add their credit cards, they'll tell us some basic information, and then we figure out the best plan for them. And in doing so, we're reducing their interest fees every month, whether it's making smarter allocations, whether it's helping them round up every month, whatever it may be. Like, we exist to basically reduce the interest fees they incur when they borrow money. We're not here to say like borrowing money is bad. In most cases, like everyone needs to borrow money at some point. We're simply here just to make sure it doesn't get out of control and they don't go through that journey of becoming financially vulnerable and then not being able to repay and then having to go into subprime territories.
Yeah. And I think you nailed down the unspoken need, or sometimes spoken, that is automate. Like as you were talking and you used the word automate, I think for the second or third time in this hour, I heard like all these friends, because like friends that don't work in fintech, but then they use the fintech products and they start saying, yeah, I have a budget, but I have to do it every month and then I don't do it. Therefore, automation is just what we need as humans that are not that engaged with their money, because it's
exactly
to do it.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've tackled automation. So basically, if I paraphrase what you just said, is I will tell Incredible information about my lending products, because I can have multiple. And then that includes basically the bank, the financial service institution that I'm using for this loan, and the amounts, the repayment dates. And then I will also say, hey, this is what I understood, correct me if I'm wrong. Hey, Jazz, or hey, Incredible, here's my £300 that I need to pay. And then basically you help automate the payments of all my loans in the best possible allocation such that I pay less interest.
Exactly. So someone will, a typical journey will be someone will create an account, add the credit cards that they want to repay. We'll then look at their historical behavior and run our classification model to understand, are they paying the minimum? Are they paying, like, how have they been repaying to date? What does that mean then for how long it's going to actually take them to clear? And that generally is a lot longer than what they think it is. They usually think, yeah, I'm paying this monthly amount and it's going to be fine. What's really interesting there actually is before we started this and we were trying to get feedback from how people do the things they do, is they treated their credit repayment bills in the same way they treated their utility bills, without understanding there is a massive difference between repaying your broadband and repaying your credit cards, right? Like, again, one is like a revolving product, what the other is a fixed term within this period of time. So for us, we first tell you where you've gone wrong historically, and that might be just showing you this is how much it's going to actually cost you to repay. This is how long it's going to take you. And then we figure out a better payment plan and we look at affordability to see how much can you actually afford. Then they get to pick their collection date. And the reason that's quite interesting is people do their monthly, so their mental accounting monthly, right? For the most part, they get paid at the end of the month. Their bills usually go out in the first week. But with credit, you have these repayments that just happen throughout the month. So then there's all this anxiety of wanting, how do you calculate your cash flow in your head and figure out like, yeah, I need this amount of money free to make these repayments. We let them pick their payment date, and that might be a day after they've been paid. Then that sum of that money will sit with us for a while until we decide to go and make their individual payouts to all of their cards. And that's always calculated in the most efficient way possible, making sure we're maximizing interest savings.
It's a complex journey that you've simplified, which is good. How have you gained customers' trust? And the reason why I'm asking this, it's because like when you make a payment, that it's just like an account transfer, check twice. If it's a semi-large amount for you, you're like, oh, is it the right name? Is it da-da-da? And then you send it. So it's important, like when you're paying someone, that it's like your money gets there safely. Now I'm giving you my money for you to make my payments. And I'm like, ooh, it makes me nervous. How did you overcome that moment of truth of, oh, it makes me nervous?
We've been quite fortunate. So the customers we've had so far are generally quite savvy, both financially and digitally, in the sense of they're accustomed to using digital tools for a certain job within their financial life. So they're used to using automated savings. In most cases, they're using a challenger bank. So open banking for them is quite a familiar experience. And when you look at open banking, generally, 8 million users in the UK, it's a household name. They're quite familiar with that as a concept. When we've taken a lot of time and attention in making sure the journeys we've built ensure people feel in control. So we show them exactly what data they're sharing. They know who we're using to do that. We use a provider to facilitate that. And again, it's thankfully a business that they're used to using in other journeys elsewhere in the financial products that they use. So we generally haven't had an issue of, I don't trust this provider. What are you doing with my money? There generally is very clear messaging before they get to Incredible and downloading it and using it that they know exactly what it's for. And again, it's for them, as soon as they make a payment, they see it's visible in the credit card statement. So it's not like there's a period of time in which they don't know what's happening, right? They deposit a sum of funds and then we execute those payments for them based on whatever we deemed is the most efficient.
Yeah, so I'll take that as you're managing every single touch point and communications touch point such really well, such that there is no space for doubt and this, like you're guiding the customer.
Exactly. And I think you need to be careful when you're doing any sort of automation. And generally, in some cases, it can be seen as like they've lost agency and they don't understand what's happening. But actually, if you educate them throughout the process, even before they've even got to your experience, like before they've got to your app or software, so long as you're messaging it very clearly and they understand the proposition, I think generally like people are willing to try these new propositions.
Yes, because then it's also that I'm in debt, right? And I have that financial stress. So that's why I'm so open to trying, which then leads me to, we've talked about peace of mind. But then there's another concept that is financial resilience.
Yes.
Can you talk to me about that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of definitions of financial resilience. I think the one we feel closest to is being able to deal with financial shock. And the way we look at financial shock is, has this unexpected cost appeared out of nowhere and impacted your finances? And the reason it's that is when we speak to customers, when we have been speaking to customers and done a bunch of user testing sessions, one of the things that we try to focus on is like, how did you get into, what is your experiences of getting into debt or getting like borrowing loads of money? And one that came up consistently is their reliance on a credit card usually began when there was something unexpected occurred. So whether it was a boiler breaking down, whether it's a car repair that they weren't expecting, or a car repair bill they weren't expecting, that generally means that they don't have a rainy day fund, right? They don't have immediate access to funds to be able to do that. So what they end up doing is using their credit card. But now they've got a credit card with a balance that they started using, and they're making their repayments, but it then creates this like hidden money you're touching this car that you generally don't look at. You don't go and look at your credit card app. It's just like invisible money. And it can, for the most part, make people like really addicted to just using it for everything. And then all of a sudden you spiraled into this very large balance. And there are some providers that increase limits, for example, without yes. like really doing the checks that they should be doing. And that generally starts to impact. I think that's what creates a lack of financial resilience, is financial shock, unexpected bills, and then all of a sudden their month-to-month cash flow that they were doing is no longer as they had planned out. So being able to deal with that, I feel that like then you're a financially resilient customer.
Yeah. At the same time, as you were speaking, I thought of myself when I was like in my early 20s, that you're describing the how you get in debt. And part of that is, yeah, you have the need because of an unexpected expense. But at the same time, there was a financial institution that gave you that credit line or that credit card, that loan, that probably was bigger than what you were supposed to have. And eventually you use it. So, no, but it's...
Yeah.
That was my case at some point, right?
It happens all the time, yeah.
Yeah, that you're like, yeah, I have the credit card. I will just use it for an emergency. Yeah, but after you have it like for 10 days, like exactly what you described. You have it there 5 years, but then there's one day. And you're like, oh, yeah, day. I have the credit card.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a gateway, like instant gratification. All it takes is one too many bad days for you wanting to buy something. So we saw the rise of revenge spending after the pandemic, where everyone was just buying stuff to feel better. And that generally, like that usually doesn't solve any issues. But again, if you have instant access to credit like that, it can make you want to spend more than you can afford.
So what would the message that I'm hearing for all the lenders out there? There is such a thing, we've talked about this before, but it's responsible lending does mean giving the right amount. Don't give huge credit lines if the customer doesn't really have the ability to repay, even if we are spreading our risk appetite.
Yeah.
It's not good for customers because that's the company risk appetite, but the customer is not well informed about all the implications that will come when they take that loan.
Yeah, I think that's going to change, right? When you look at it, like historically, if you look at how lending is done, there is a decision that's made at a point in time. And that's when they deem you like, okay, they can afford, we can take the risk on this customer, they can afford it. But things change, like things evolve daily, and they're evolving faster than they ever have before. But one thing that we're going to start to see, I personally think, and we're an enabler of this as well, and we're building towards this, is how do you like constantly monitor how things are going to then whether you need to increase the limit or reduce the limit? Are you constantly doing checks to make sure this person can afford what they have, or they can afford more, or whatever it may be? And we're seeing this a lot with the newer lending products. BNPL, but I know there's a bunch of criticisms for them. They do more regular checks based on, and they increase the limits very slowly based on what you can afford. But from what we've seen anyway, I'm sure there are examples of where that's not true. And traditional lending, I think, needs to move in the same direction, where before they do a limit increase, have you done the right affordability checks? It shouldn't just be about, I think, you know, it shouldn't just be about, yes, they're incurring, they're spending this much and they're repaying, because that's not always going to be the case. Because as soon as we have a financial shock or things start going beyond what the model says, we eventually find ourselves in the problems that we're seeing now.
Yeah. So then the cohort of customers that you are helping, you said they are, your target audience is pre-arrears. So by definition, they are already in some sort of vulnerable situation as such. How does your product help them improve their credit score such?
Yeah, so I'd say they are pre-arrears, and in a lot of cases they aren't vulnerable, but they generally have quite a large balance. To answer that question specifically though, so how do we improve their credit score? When you look at your credit score, one of the most telling signs of if someone can afford to repay is their repayment behavior. So primarily Incredible helps people improve their repayment behavior and makes them make better repayment, like more optimized repayments. It makes them make more repayments. And by doing that, it improves repayment behavior. And that's one of the largest signals of if someone is a credit worthy borrower. So that's how we're tackling it, by improving the behavior of repayments.
Good. So then I think we are linking like the beginning with the middle with the end. So if I then go back to the beginning, my first question was, how do we build more purpose-driven fintechs? And you started talking about like ecosystem.
Yeah.
Not only focusing as a individual fintech and my needs, but like looking at the customer and see how we can work together as an ecosystem.
Yeah.
As part of your proposition, you're also building an ecosystem and you have partners joining you in this journey. Can you tell us a little bit about more what you're doing?
Yeah. So again, like most of our proposition is consumer driven to help mm-hmm. them on their day-to-day managing of finances. But generally, there's a lot of partners out there within financial institutions who equally benefit from a solution like ours. So one place that we look is, how do we partner with lenders to make them, A, like access a customer that generally can afford lower cost credit, but might be ignored by traditional underwriting systems. The other is, how do you benefit, or how do you provide value rather, to a customer that may not be able to afford your loan right now, but you do want to provide them with the tooling to be able to get to a position in which they can afford a lower cost loan. Because usually when you look at like being rejected for a loan, that's basically it, right? Like they say, sorry, we can't give you anything. Go to another lender that probably has a much higher interest rate. And that generally then basically creating the cycle. So the way we look at it is, okay, fine. You don't technically have to qualify for a loan. Like you don't actually have to have, there's no impact to your credit score to use Incredible. We don't really care if you've been rejected for a loan or not, but what we can do is get you on that path to being able to access like better credit. And you know, who benefits from people being more credit worthy? It's lenders, right? So that's the capacity in which we will be working with partners.
I like that because then it's a win. Because you're helping customers.
It's one of the few cases you're helping
helping the lenders. So it is
and
it's very focused on customer as well.
Exactly.
Let's help the lenders, therefore. Let's do this. It's more of a let's help the customers. And then to be ready to access financing if they need it.
Exactly. I think a financially healthier society will generally create better outcomes for fintechs, lenders, consumers, borrowers, basically.
Yeah. So now if we imagine the world in, it's not that far away, like 2 to 3 years time, maybe 5 just to stretch it.
Yeah.
And now we have AI has been experimental in the past year and a half.
Yes.
Now, like in 3 years, it's like full on.
Yeah.
How does the world of lending, how has it changed now that AI is part of our BAU?
We'll really be able to understand like individual use cases, individual financial profiles, individual financial behaviors, and it will be easier to create financial products for a specific customer. Because again, like we've created a bunch of products that generally put people into buckets, but in a lot of cases, people don't fit in these buckets. If you look at thin credit file customers, if you look at people that have come from another country and want to take out a phone contract or whatever it may be, generally there's not a lot of products set out for them. There are a few great examples. So having AI fully embedded into these propositions will generally mean more access for consumers, which is a great thing. The other thing I think there will be a lot more focus on, again, going back to what we said earlier, is focus on automation. So if you have money sitting in a bank account somewhere that you're not really using, there is no reason why providers should just automatically move that into a savings account. Or if you can see that people are generally just making bad financial decisions, there's no reason why we can't go and create journeys to stop people from doing that. If you're going to incur overdraft fees, but you've got money elsewhere, like why are we not automatically moving money from A to B? It's all about moving, again, automating these actions. And I think we're not that far away from doing that. We're already proving that we can, you know, you can already do that today with very limited use in AI, like very limited AI. So yeah, I think that's going to be basic. But the interesting will come from if everyone's doing that, how do you keep your customer, right? Which is a separate issue.
That's going to be the challenge.
Yeah.
So that reminds me of the beginning of the conversation that we're talking about customer outcomes rather than my customer.
Yeah. And like, you know, when you look at financial services generally, it's one of the it's the oldest, largest, most complex industry that exists. And for the most part, it's existed in the exact same way. Like you either paying some money, you're investing, you're borrowing, you're insuring. And I don't think we haven't seen any other way. We found more faster, more efficient ways to do those exact same things. So who's not? Maybe there is another pillar of what will come in the rise of AI, that finance looks very different today than it will in a decade's time.
Yeah, we'll figure it out as new technology and our brains expand into the creative world, and we'll just come up with the use cases. Yeah.
Yeah.
So as we are getting towards the end of the episode, one of my favorite questions that I ask absolutely every single one is, if you were to change one thing, but it's just one thing in fintech as an industry that could have the most impact on customers, colleagues, and shareholders, what could that be?
It's gonna sound like I'm repeating myself again, but I generally think if every provider or if every financial institution or every fintech were to open up their APIs or open up access, at least in some form or in some shape or form, we would have much better outcomes a lot sooner. But again, like that comes with fraud risk, security risk. It comes with, again, commercial risk for some providers. So I know it's not an easy thing to go and do, but I generally think the quicker we get there and the quicker we make open finance a reality, the quicker we can create the solutions that we will want to exist.
Perfect. And I think you used three key words, that is open finance with the right fraud controls while having customer outcomes at the center of what we do.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. That's a beautiful way to finish. Thank you,
Jas.
Thank you
so much.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
I've enjoyed it so
much. Thank you, everyone.
Take care.
Yes, it was good. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye. See you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Your time and energy means a lot. If you want to support the show, remember to give it a follow and DM me to get in touch. I promise I do respond.